Hello, testing. All right, everyone, let's get started. How's everyone doing? Day three of Tech Ed. So by now, I'm sure all of you have hit fatigue with all the technical information you've received. Is that right? I'm seeing a lot of nodding heads. So this session is going to be interesting because we're not going to be reviewing as much technical details on Windows Azure, but it's going to be more about customer stories. So this is going to be about experiences that some of our customers have had while they have been while they were deploying their on-premise applications on Windows infrastructure services. My name is Sunny Makwan. I'm part of the Windows Azure engineering team. And when I joined the team, my role was to engage with partners and work with them to get them onboarded onto the Windows infrastructure services, and this was before GA. So I got an opportunity to work with some really cool customers, get to know what their challenges were, what problems they were trying to face, and really, you know, walk with them through the journey to deploy their applications. So today we're going to be looking at some of these stories. So briefly, this is going to be the structure of today's talk. I wanted to call out one thing. This is not going, as I said, this is not going to be a technical deep dive, and I'm also going to assume that at this point of time you're familiar with Windows Azure IaaS offering. Just with a show of hands, can you tell me how many people have tried out Azure VMs? Okay, many of you. And how many of you have attended talks about IaaS? Great. So I'm going to just, we're not going to be focusing a lot, but as I go along, if you have any questions, please feel free to stop me and ask me. But we're going to start by just to set the stage. I'm going to quickly go over the timeline to kind of talk about how the whole infrastructure services offering has evolved ever since we announced it last year. So that's going to be very brief, but we're going to be focusing mostly on the second portion. So today we're going to be talking, I'm going to be talking about five different customers and what they have done and what they have built, and in the end we'll wrap up and we'll do a Q&A. And hopefully we have time for Q&A. All right, so this is how, where we are and where we started. So June 2012, right before Tech Ed last year, Windows Azure announced the infrastructure as a service offering, what has now been called infrastructure services. So throughout this talk, I'll be using IaaS and infrastructure services interchangeably. They're the same thing. So when in June last year, we announced the preview availability, and that is when a lot of the customers started working, and we connected with some of them to kind of get feedback on our product at the time. In April 2013, we announced general availability, and along with general availability, we added some new features to the existing offering. So the first and foremost, the difference between preview and general availability obviously is that we now announce that we have a commercially backed SLA of 99.95% availability, and also some formal support agreements that the customers can use. And we introduced some new stock images, so new SQL images, SharePoint 2013 evaluation image, for example, and more Linux images in the gallery. So we also, at the time, we had only five different VM sizes that you could use, the maximum being with 8 cores and 14 gigs of memory. At GA, we announced two additional sizes with higher memory, A6 and A7. And also we announced the remote PowerShell capability. And now at Tech Ed New North America, we announced additional features. One was, and also this was announced at keynote here, now you can stop a VM without being charged for it. You have permanent billing, previously it was per hour. We have public ACLs that you can use to restrict the traffic to your virtual, the public endpoint on your virtual machines. And finally, we have a very attractive discounted rates for MSDN subscribers to use virtual machines for the dev test operations. So one of the things, as you see, is that the team is very, very focused on making continuous improvements. And if you ask anybody from my team, they will rattle out their favorite features that they would want to work on. But one of the forcing function, kind of the driver behind what we build and what we focus on has been our customers. So because we never have a dearth of features that we can build, we always look to our customers to tell us what is the most important to them, what is the top of the mind. So the features that you see on this list, for example, the need for VMs with higher memory sizes, this came from customers. This is a direct customer impact feature. Similarly with stopping the VM without billing, this was again a direct customer a feature built based on customer feedback. So how did we get that feedback? So in late 2012, we introduced a program called Managed Preview Program, where we signed up about 30 customers into the program. The program was very similar to our traditional TAP programs or the RDP program, which stands for Rapid Development Program. But the one change we did make was that which was a little experimental in nature, was that we did not have the formal agreements that we would have normally required from our TAP customers. We just made it very, very fluid. We let the customers drive the way that they want to engage with us. We spoke to the customers. We allowed them to define the cadence with which they wanted to engage with us. We allowed them to define the deliverables and the timelines that they wanted to deploy on our platform. So it was very customer-driven program. And we saw huge benefits of that, because then we saw that people were engaging with us. The customers that ended up being in the program were highly engaged. They were very motivated to make use of this opportunity. And in the end, we got some fantastic results. And the program was driven, was a combined effort between engineering, marketing, and our customer advisory team. And this is where we got feedback. The 30 customers, we made sure that there was a diversity in the workloads that they were building. There was a diversity in the scenarios that they were interested in, and also geographical regions. So this gave us a wide base of feedback, which we used to continuously prioritize and make sure that we are working on the most important things and the most impactful things. So this is just a slide to show you some of the customers that we have worked with and that are currently using Windows Azure services. So this is more, I like it because it's pretty and colorful. All right, so to get to the meat of the presentation, here are the five customers that we'll be talking about. We have Blackbaud, which is a software company that builds software and SaaS offerings for nonprofit organizations. We have Trek Bikes. So if you've stopped by our booth, the Windows Azure booth, you know that we're raffling a Trek bike every day. They build some really fantastic, cool bikes. We have Telenor, which is a telecommunications company, Jackson Hewitt, which is a widely known tax service in US. And the last one, this is a little weird, we didn't have a PR agreement with them, so I cannot disclose the name, but they have a really compelling story, I added it. So it's an online travel booking company. Let's start with Trek Bikes. And to begin with, there's a case study video that we will switch to.
Trek Bicycle Corporation was founded in 1976 in Waterloo, Wisconsin. We offer Ascend to about 1,000 of our retailers as their operating system. A way that they can manage their business effectively, they can focus on what they do best, which is really managing that consumer relationship.
We're trying to create a kick-ass retail management system, and that's where our area of expertise is. Our customers don't really care where we're hosting or what technology we're working on. They just want it to be available all the time.
In a traditional data center or even a colo, there's a 6-week, 8-week process
process to get a new server, to get it up and running, and we would spend thousands and thousands of dollars to host a handful of servers. You look at the different options, and we have the cloud offerings out there, such as Amazon, but you look at Azure, and we're programming Ascend using Microsoft technologies. It's just a perfect fit.
Everyone looks at Amazon, but they are lacking the platform as a service offering. So we chose Azure because it was easy. As long as we had a credit card, we could spin up servers. We didn't have to go get approval. We didn't have to hire any new employees to manage it. I've just been able to go out, click a few buttons, and get started. Windows Azure provided us platform as a service. It allows us to focus more effort on providing features to our dealers and less time managing our infrastructure. Infrastructure as a service allows us to migrate our existing workloads up to the same data center that our platform as a service offering is running in. This allows us to save costs on bandwidth as well as keep our processes, such as our ETL processes, running a lot faster since the data is all in the same location. This allows us for better control and security as we don't have to open up additional firewall rules on our Azure VMs. For our developers, it's super simple.
Well, the busy season here at Trek is a crazy time. Things need to be up all the time. Azure allows us to scale to those peaks and valleys. We don't really have to worry about acquisitions of new hardware, bigger networks. We can just make it happen. With Azure, we can get something in a day, less than a day. You go to infrastructure as a service, and we can get double or triple the amount of servers at half the price or more. It's a really great thing.
Trek Bike's motto is to deliver best-in-class products. So our bikes are the best available, and Windows Azure is the best cloud platform available to us.
We can focus more on actually doing what we like to do, which is code, which is go bike riding, which is take our application to the next level and not have to worry about the infrastructure behind it.
I love that video. It makes them sound like such a fun company. It makes me want to go work for them. So I met with some of the Trek folks, and they're extremely passionate about what they do. So the company essentially designs, manufactures, and sells bicycles in a different wide variety of range. And I heard the most expensive bike was upwards of $10,000, which I thought was crazy. But that's their passion. That's what they want to do. What they don't want to be in the business of is managing a data center. And they're very vocal about it. So the challenge that the company was hitting was that they had a retail management system that they called Ascend, through which they were using, they were managing about 5,000 bicycle retailers around the world. And in order to support them, they were running it on a data center provider, and they were hitting scale issues, availability issues, and any time that they needed to add more capacity, it would take them anywhere from 2 weeks to 6 weeks to get new servers. So they were hitting problems because the server hardware that they had was becoming obsolete. So many of these challenges, I am sure that some of these problems resonate with you as well. The time to put up new, pull up new capacity, the process that you need to go through to get approvals, the problems that you have when your service actually becomes popular and you're actually successful at what you're doing, the need to scale rapidly. So that is when they started looking at cloud providers, and as they said, they're primarily a Microsoft shop. And one of the reasons they chose Azure was because of the seamlessness and the integration of the dev environment with our infrastructure services offering. What they have built is... So this is an overview of what they have right now running in Azure, and they have... and they're continuing to work on this. So they have, obviously... they have their dev test set up and their production set up both in Azure. And it's not just the SN retail management system is a host of applications, and they're 100% in the cloud. So that is what is a little unique about them. Usually when users first try us out, they try a subset of their applications, or they try a few tiers of their application on Azure. But these guys went all out, and we are very flattered that they took a bet on us. So the way their project is set up is that they have this underlying supporting infrastructure of Active Directory, certificate services, DNS, what have you, on which their applications run. And then they have both the dev test set up as well as the staging environment, which is replicated in their production environment. So they have the web front end, they have a public-facing SharePoint site, and underneath which they have SQL DB along with other SQL services like integration services, analysis services, reporting services. And they have the continuous integration and deployment. They use TeamCity for this, so their developers are constantly adding new features that they're continuously pushing to the dev test, making sure that their integration tests run well before they push it out to production. So it's a very agile development cycle. And again, they spin up as many VMs as possible as they need. And they determined, so one of their key asks that they had asked us was the ability to stop VM without billing, because when they were using the dev test, it wasn't that they need the VM to be running up and running, but they did not want the inconvenience of tearing down their setup in order to not incur billing. So this was one of the feedback that we got from them, which we delivered. And along with that, they have some cross-cutting technologies that they use, like monitoring, and they have a remote desktop gateway. So overall, this is what they have running. This is their setup of what they're running in Azure. So when I asked them about what is the recommendation that they would give to other companies that are evaluating moving to the cloud, so these are some of the recommendations that I got from Adam that you saw, Adam Salvo that was in the video. So one of the things that he says is that for them, they are building their applications on VMs. You know, it doesn't matter if the VMs are running on on-premise data center or they're running in Azure. So he basically says that, you know, there's a lot of, especially when people start thinking about moving to the cloud, there's a lot of hesitation in terms of risks involved, you know, the learning curve involved. So his recommendation is that just start with what you know. You know, I mean, just start with building the application the way you would build for an on-premise VM. And go from there, because as you start building, you will learn more the capabilities that Azure provides, and then you can improvise. So for him, he felt that rather than getting overwhelmed, thinking that this is going to be a complex project, start with what you know, and obviously you have to build for cloud because it's a different paradigm, and we'll talk about what that means a little later. And the second thing he says is that this is something that he would recommend both for on-prem as well as cloud, is that having a centralized management system definitely helps reduce the complexity. So you have your service bus, which manages both your on-premise and your Azure VM. So anytime you spin up a new instance or you remove a new instance, you have a centralized way to manage all the instances out there. So that kind of eliminates some of the headache. The second thing is that is about embracing the PowerShell. So obviously, once you're getting started, the simplest thing is to start spin up a VM from the portal. It barely takes 30 seconds. And in fact, if you guys have entered the Tech Bike Challenge, you must have already done the step. So it's very easy, get started there, but really the most powerful thing that Azure has to offer is the ability to script against our APIs and use PowerShell to do that. Because this is especially true if you have multiple organizations using the standard configurations, because you invest in building the script once and you can run it any number of times. And also if you're making use of, let's say, our stopping our VMs without our billing or having to scale out your infrastructure, the PowerShell scripts can be extremely, extremely useful for that. Uh, So these were some of the quotes that we got. And the main essence that we get from them, this is kind of reflected in the video, is that, again, these guys want to focus on what they are good at. And they basically tell us that Windows Azure is good at managing infrastructure, so we're going to let you do what you do best, so we can do what we do best. So that's our first story. Next one, we're going to talk about Jackson Hewitt Tax Services. So I'm not sure, Jackson Hewitt, is everybody familiar with the company? Right, so it's an American tax company, super popular. I know we're moving from biking to taxes, which is the opposite of excitement. but the interesting part about these guys is that not everybody bikes, but everybody has to file taxes. And you do that every year. So again, I'm sure the dates I'm going to quote are probably different in each of the countries. But in USA, everybody starts to get their tax returns about end of January. And that's when people, especially if you're expecting money, people immediately swarm and then they start filing their taxes. So they see a very high pickup in load during last week of January and first week of February. And again, the deadline to file taxes is April 15th. A lot of procrastinators like me, I should stop doing that, like me, wait until the last day and then scrambling to do it a few hours before. So the challenge for Jackson Hewitt, and this is very interesting, is that so they obviously deal with the customers coming in last minute, but they also need to file those taxes with the US government, with IRS. So, and if for whatever reason they are late, the customers are late, and they never get a second chance. If they mess up once, nobody will ever go back to them. So they are very, very particular about being reliable with the services. And speaking to them, they've had occasions where the challenge is with scaling as needed, because it's even though they know exactly when the spikes occur, it's very hard to predict how high the spikes are going to be. So this is why they started looking into using a cloud service provider as opposed to using their on-premise. And they're using a hybrid setup, so they still have some of their applications running on on-premise, and it's a very interesting setup. So this is how they work. So they have what they define as a scale unit. So a scale unit basically uses our PaaS offerings. So they have some, the web front end with some worker roles which are doing some back end processing. And the reason why they use the IaaS offering is because they wanted to run SQL 2012. So that was the reason, for them, that was a missing gap, which was not available on PaaS, which on PaaS you use SQL DB. So when IaaS came out with this offering to them, this was the perfect, complete solution. So they have multiple of these scale units that they scale out or scale up as needed with their workload. So they have some of their, so what you see on the bottom left-hand side is their on-premise on Earth, is their on-premise data centers. And they have replications of this scale units. And they also are building these scale units out on Azure as and when needed. So they're kind of working with fixed capacity and using Azure as capacity as and when needed to expand out. So, and they're using, and you see this is, they're using the virtual networks to connect their on-premise data centers to Windows Azure. So the best practices, this is coming from Timothy Corey, who's an architect in Jackson Hewitt. He basically says that as developers, when we start building out applications, we build the application as itself. We just think about the application running in one instance. So, but again, when scale is a factor, and that's the challenge that you're trying to solve, always design your application in a way where how would this application run when you have n instances of it? So So think about the completeness of your implementation and give yourself room to replicate that. The next one, measured redesign repeat. What he means here is that once you have built your scale unit, measure to see what the capacity is and measure to see what has become your bottleneck. Are you CPU bound? Are you memory bound? Are you disk bound? And based on that, you kind of understand what it is that one scale unit can, what was the kind of load that one scale unit can take. And that will give you an idea that based on your load, how many of these scale units that you will need. And this also ties into the next point, which is undersize, don't oversize your rig. So for example, let's say you start out with an Excel VM. Which has, you know, at the time, eight cores and 14 gig. We have higher VM sizes, higher than Excel, but when they were building out, Excel was the highest one. So what they found was that they were very disk I/O bound. So for them to increase, it didn't really make any sense for using all that extra CPU capacity or extra memory because they were being disk bound. So in a lot of ways, they were wasting the extra capacity that they were buying. So instead, what they felt was that, you know, a medium was giving them the equal throughput as an XL. So rather than have 5 XL, it's better to go with 20 medium, which is the same price, by the way. The total comes out to be the same. But what the 20 having 20 medium boxes gives you is a failover, the fault tolerance. So if one of your VMs goes down, you're losing only 5% of your capacity as opposed to losing 20% of your capacity. So that's kind of what, again, it depends on what your load is, how your application, what is it stressing the most. So that, again, the last two points go hand in hand is that measure to see how your scale unit or your rig is doing, and accordingly design or accordingly spin up the VMs that you need. Right. So and as I said, so Jackson Hewitt was also already looking into using our PaaS offering at the time because, again, that gave them the flexibility to not even manage the VMs at all that was being taken care of by Microsoft. However, the fact that they wanted to run SQL 2012, which wasn't available in PaaS, once we came up with our IaaS offering for them, that became the more complete solution. And all right, so next story we have is Telenor. How many folks are familiar with Telenor? It's a UK-based, so all right, more popular in Europe. I'm sorry, it's not you guys, Norwegian. So it's a telecommunications company. They have almost 150 million subscribers. Telenor is our kind of poster child for DevTest. So the challenge that they set out was that they were using SharePoint 2007 and they wanted to upgrade to 2013. And they have 18 business units in which they wanted to improve the collaboration. At this point, they're still not thinking about moving anything to production. This was more for their dev test unit. So for them, because of the number of business units that they have in place, for them to build capacity on-premise was becoming a huge hindrance because of the cost, upfront cost that they had to take on. Which is why setting up their dev test configurations on a cloud provider was kind of a very obvious choice for them. So this is how they have their and what they're testing. What they're testing is this whole migration project to see that all aspects of the current setup are going to continue to work with SharePoint 2013 when they do the upgrade. So they have a number of, I mean, obviously we're showing two dev farms over here, but they have a large number of dev farms set up, which is, again, this is the equivalent of Jackson Hewitt scale unit. That's the standard configuration that they're mostly using across the company. And then they also have their testing and pre-production set up. all sitting on top of a common layer of Active Directory Exchange in DNS. And then they have the individual developer boxes to manage the front end. So this is, and the thing is that for them, the biggest challenge is scale and also the time to bring up a new dev test environment. So the recommendations to other customers looking at moving to cloud is basically that even if you feel like you're not production ready at this point, you know, even if you have other concerns or compliance issues, one of the things that you can get started right away is to set up your dev test environments, is to try to see how your existing applications will run on the cloud whenever you're ready, right? So you don't have to, there's nothing stopping you from trying that out, you know, while you figure out other stuff. And again, I mean, they repeat the whole concept with PowerShell. Again, for them, that's a huge factor because of the number of setups that they have. So they work with our consulting services teams to come up with, because a SharePoint and far more to set that up is, can take anywhere, like from a scripting point of view, it takes a few hours, and doing it manually is completely laborious. Since they are replicating standard configurations, using PowerShell is extremely convenient for them. Right. Well, so that was using Azure was the right solution for their business. Next one is Blackboard. So Blackboard is a SaaS provider. They build applications for nonprofit organizations. And they have built one application which is running in production on Windows Azure. It's an online classroom application. And I also have a video for them that is very interesting.
Blackbaud is the industry-leading provider for software and services that serve the not-for-profit community.
Kind of our core theme is to help them concentrate on their mission, but not have to pay attention to what's going on IT-wise.
All of our software solutions are things that can help them better communicate with their donors and prospects to raise more money.
Blackbaud has kind of a large educational services department. Traditionally, when somebody wanted to learn about one of our products, we would have those customers download the product from our website. Each time we'd have them kind of set up things on their own, we had calls of anything from troubleshooting typical PC problems to internet connectivity to how do I get a database set up for a program that I don't even understand.
And so we needed an easy way to provide them access to our software. One of the things that we were able to do was leverage Windows Azure and infrastructure as a service to provide access to a sample version of our software in one or two clicks. If we would have tried to do it using our internal resources, it would have cost a whole lot more money and taken a whole lot more time.
Training has changed tremendously here. With Windows Azure, we're able to spin up virtual machines, virtualized storage, custom tailored to students based on when they actually take the class.
And we're able to do it at a moment's notice, something that never would have been possible if we would have used any other means.
Microsoft made some very good architectural decisions with infrastructure as a service and directly mapping cores. You're going to have the compute today and in the future.
It was really a dramatic win for my department and really more importantly my customers because we were finally able to provide this access to our legacy solutions in a very quick, easy, efficient, and cost-effective way.
It's doing exactly what we hoped, which is provide kind of the seamless way for customers to get to their data without thinking about the back end.
And in the end, what that means is that our customers are able to focus on one of Blackbaud's key goals, the reason that we're here, which is to help them make the world a better place.
Right, so as I mentioned, they build software for nonprofits. So the project that they built on Azure was a distance learning program. Then the way it worked was that they had classrooms that they would publish, and users or the students would sign up. They never knew how many students would sign up for any particular class, so they obviously couldn't anticipate load ahead of time, so it wasn't constant load. And also, this is interesting because let's say they have one or two classrooms per day. They needed to spin up the VMs only during that time. They didn't really need the capacity running the whole day. So this was an opportunity for them to definitely cut costs. Blackboard again was the huge ask was the whole stop VMs without billing. That because what was happening previously when we did not support it before TechEd was that they would build up, spin up VMs to run their classrooms, and once the classrooms were done, they were tearing them down, and they were kind of doing this every day, which added to their costs. So we solved that problem, which was an ask from many customers. So the setup again is a very simplistic diagram. Is that they have the students are enrolling to their cornerstone, and that's the front end that they're seeing. And as I said, in this case, the distance learning program customers, they didn't really care where the classroom was being run. You know, they just needed the service. And the fact that they could spin up capacity and reduce costs when not in use, which was a majority, most portion of the, or the longest time during the day when the VMs were not in use, for them, that's what drew them to using the cloud, as opposed to spinning up capacity themselves. So I spoke to Don Noonan, who was on the video. The best practices he recommends is, for him, group policies, he says, that should be your best friend, right? I mean, that's the way, I mean, especially when you have multiple instances running and you have, your work is very management heavy of VMs. Use group policy for your advantage. You know, build your policies on what you would use to manage your VMs. Secure your cloud service, and the last two, if at first you try again. So I think when this is where we start to talk about some of the factors to think about while building an application on the cloud is that you are kind of playing in a different game, right? Before you were running your applications on server, on hardware that you can touch. You controlled when your hardware was being updated. You know, you kind of had more control about, you know, if something went down, you were in charge of troubleshooting. You knew more about it. Given that now somebody else is managing your hardware for you, make sure that you build some safety nets within your application to account for transient faults. So that's the second point, which is the third point, which is that, you know, maybe the infrastructure is not available for a couple seconds. Right? I mean, make sure that application doesn't just come crashing down. I mean, build retry logics, for example. I mean, that's just an example. But it is to be aware of the fact that such things can happen because Windows Azure is running on commodity hardware. While we do try our best to make sure that we recover very quickly and then we abstract those failures from you, outages do occur, and we want you to be aware of that and manage those at your application layer as well. So obviously they are happy that they get to spend time developing applications as opposed to managing hardware. One of Don's favorite quotes that I didn't add on the slide, but he's one of our very engaging customers. We get a lot of feedback from him. He gives us a lot of good insights into what scenarios that they need or in general what customers need. So he talks about how when we continuously keep him up to date on all the new features that we have rolling in, he says that you consistently change the conversations I have with my boss because you have these new features coming that completely change what we were discussing about. That. All right, so last one. This is so this is an online travel booking. This is a software as a service, the vendor who's building that. This is a really interesting story in the sense they're kind of an example of what not to do, but they're one of our customers, and we had a really interesting experience here. So what they have done is that they took their existing ASP.NET Ajax application from on-premise onto Azure VMs, which is great that they didn't have to do any work and it ran great. And in fact, they went production September of last year when we were still in preview. We did not have formal SLAs or formal support plans at all. Again, they took a bet on us, which we were very happy about, but it was also challenging because their application had multiple single points of failure. They had a load balance endpoint through which all the traffic was coming. They had per tenant RDP that they were using, and they were talking to other systems. All of the data was going through SQL Server 2000. It was being stored in Azure Blob Storage. The problem that happened was the fact that they had a single DB. So they had one endpoint. So when we looked at their architecture, we did warn them that this was prone to failures. This was something that they need to be careful about. This February, when we did hit a couple of planned maintenance, when we had to take VMs down, and usually a planned maintenance lasts for about 30 minutes, we took their production service down, which kind of was a wake-up call. So this is kind of pretty much the only... So this is my only takeaway for them, because again, as you are considering moving to Windows Azure, this is a point we definitely want you to keep in mind, is that plan for transient faults and plan for planned maintenance. So the way we have the planned maintenance set up right now is that we have data centers, we have sister data centers in each region. So we try to take one data center in each region down one Friday evening and the second set on Saturday afternoons. So that way they are spaced out. But the question that I get asked a lot is that if customers can specify when they want to be updated, or can they specify that don't update my VM? And that's simply not possible because of scale issues, right? I mean, because it's possible that we have multiple tenants on the same host machine. So, if each individual customer is asking us to not update it, that would be quite problematic for us. But we do have ways in which you can avoid being taken down, and this is where you get the 99.95% availability SLA. How many of you are familiar with availability sets? Oh, okay. So a lot of you. So we highly recommend using availability sets. Again, the other high availability features like always on and mirroring. So for those of you who are not familiar with how we work with availability sets, so this is kind of a typical rack that we manage, right? I mean, so we have multiple physical machines in the same rack, and we have a power unit and a rack switch. So when you create an availability set, one of the things that we take care of is that the VMs that you put in that availability set, that they go on different racks altogether. And when we do planned maintenance, we never take down the two racks that the two VMs are on at the same time. They are done sequentially. So at any given point of time, you know, the load balancer is sort of obviously balancing the load between the two VMs. But let's say that we took down the rack on the right. So the load balancer knows, and then now we redirect your traffic to the VM that is still up and running. So this is how the whole availability set feature works. And we this obviously doesn't take into account something like a natural disaster where the whole data center is out. But this does take the planned updates. And for single instance VMs, one of the process that we set in place is that before we roll out any planned update, we do send all single instance VM customers a notice 48 hours before the update is going out. So at least they have the ability to react to that and potentially spin up a second VM and add it to the availability set. So those were the five customer stories. I hope some of the challenges that these customers have faced resonated with some of the conversations that you're having. But to wrap up, I just wanted to reiterate a few points. So again, I mean, it's very cheap to pull up a VM. You know, just if you haven't already, take advantage of the discounted MSDN offer. How many folks here have MSDN subscriptions? Yeah, so, and how many of you have already activated your Windows Azure trial? What a few of you, okay. So yeah, just try and see how easy it is to get started. And even if you're not production ready, consider moving your dev test workloads, consider having one configuration. This kind of helps you get familiar with some of the features that we have available. And the last one, which is something that we kind of stress on, especially if availability is a huge factor for you, please do design your applications and set up your configurations for the cloud. That's all I have. Thank you for attending, and thank you for taking the time to travel and come to TechEd.